You're listening to the Zandbergen Report, where wealth strategies and investment wisdom collide with Bart Zandbergen, your distinguished host and certified financial planner.
Welcome to the Zandbergen Report, a showcase for wealth strategies and investment wisdom that's essential for our evolving world. I'm your host, Bart Zandbergen. I'm pleased to have my partner, Letitia Birbaum, in with me today. Letitia, hello.
Hello.
Paul, I haven't seen you in a few weeks. Nice to see you.
Yeah. Now, I noted that you said, I'm pleased to have her here, but quickly, abruptly said, Paul, just good to see you. So, I'm not feeling the love here.
Paul, it's always great to see you.
That's all
I
want to hear.
I have to tell you, I've been realigned with who you are. I thought for a second that you were not human.
I'm not. I am strictly a robot. You know, you talk about that, but there are more and more of those things. We had somebody on from a company called XAI. And anyway, it's a robotic personal assistant. And by God, you can't tell. I mean, it answers and talks, and you can kind of converse with it and stuff. And it's amazing what's happening. So maybe Letitia will be out next year, we'll just have a
robot replacing me.
I was going to tell you, Paul, better watch out for job security.
I'm trying to immediately pass it off to Letitia here.
Well, I think we have a good show in store for today.
I'm looking for a debate today here. I'm hoping you guys take off the gloves and really, you know.
Well, there might be a subject or two in here. We're going to be talking about a successful retirement. We want to approach it from a couple of different ways. First of all, with our clients, we like to use the term also financial independence. So depending on your net worth and where you are in the status of working and age and so forth, some people need to plan for retirement in order to get and achieve. And others are approaching and or in it. And then the question is, can we survive or sustain a successful life?
And I like to say that plan the life you want to live. And then that way, your future, you live on your terms.
I like that. And I saw, actually, it was a sign off the 405 freeway the other day. And it was something to the effect of, people spend more time reading the TV guide than they do planning for their retirement.
Oh, so sad.
I was driving into work today, and I saw some really good advice off the 405 freeway. I saw a big sign that said, Jesus saves, and underneath it, it put, but Moses invests. So I just thought I'd pass that on.
That's a good one. I like that one.
Thanks, Paul.
All right. So from that regard, retirement planning, we're going to talk about it in a couple of different ways. One, as a working individual, what kind of plans can you use to help you get there? And the other component of today's conversation will be, hey, I'm in retirement or I'm approaching retirement. How do I plan for it? Tisha, would you prefer to start?
Oh, I love it. So depending on where you are, so if you want to say that you're like a millennial or Gen X, where would you start for that planning? Or if you're, if you have 30 years to retire or 30 years of retirement, I say let's start in the beginning and then we can...
Okay, work our way up?
Yeah,
okay.
From there.
And that there might start the first debate, Paul.
Okay. We'll get the bell ready and ring first round here.
Boxing gloves.
All right. So a very common question is, how much money will I need at retirement? And many times it's put in terms of what percentage of my current income and or current expenses would I need. So, Letitia, I'm going to let you answer first.
I would say in a rule of thumb that I know that we disagree on that, so I'm just warning everyone here, that if you're you're just starting your retirement and it just sounds so far away and the idea of putting money away when you don't get to enjoy it now is a hard thing to swallow and to understand. So baby steps, I would say, first and foremost, if you haven't even started, at least start somewhere. That's really, really important. And then there's a lot of plans now that you can work up and increase over time. And then once you start to see the value of the tax savings, of deferring, then you see a lot more effects. But rule of thumb, let's just pretend you're making $100,000. I say you want to at least save 75% of your income. So you want to be saving at least $75,000 is that number that you want to have in retirement years.
For income, $75,000 a year
income. In income,
okay.
Correct. Yeah.
All right. So my counterpunch to that, and again, everything that we say here, I believe should be qualified with, it's a case by case. There are general rules.
Yeah.
And there's something that really applies to that we'll talk about in a minute, which is that next question is how much should you save? We're talking about now how much someone spends, but how much you should save.
Yeah.
So I think in planning, many times it's at least 100% of current expenses and or for the first 5 years, 110 or 120%. This is why. People retire right out of the gate. And if they're, young enough, or I should say healthy enough or mobile enough, hey, I've got some deferred travel. I'm going to really do a lot more golf. I'm going to do trips with the family. So although it could be 75 or 85%, but many times I've seen 100 to 125%, at least for 5 years.
Yeah.
And then either way, whether it's we plan for a 75% or 125, what we do at OptiVest Wealth Management in our planning is we look at, okay, so we'll use my example. We'll start with that.
Yeah.
So we'll do 125% for the first 5 years. We'll drop down to 100% for the next 5 years, and then we'll drop down to 75% for 10 years and beyond.
So that's just so the audience understands, you're talking about how much money you're spending once you've retired. So the first 5 years and then the next 5 years.
Correct.
And then the remaining portion.
And as a percentage of pre-retirement expenses.
Right.
Right. So if someone's spending $100,000 a year,
yeah,
I would say, again, case by case, depending on their lifestyle and their objectives, perhaps we plan on them spending $120,000 for the first 5 years, drop down to $100,000 for the next five, and then $75,000 for year 11 and beyond.
Yeah.
Just a thought.
And I know your answer why you would do that, but do you want to tell the audience why you think that, just big picture, why you have that laddered?
Yeah, because what I've seen in my experience over the years is even if someone comes out of the gate, hey, we're going to do that $10,000 a year travel and Rome and cruises and whatnot. After about 5 or 10 years, they're like, yeah, done, over it. We really like where we are.
Yeah.
And or there's health issues that prevent someone from doing that. So, again, qualify, probably not the last time I'm going to say it. It is a case by case, but I think that's a pretty good general rule.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Can I throw in a takeaway that I got from your show that I'm surprising you're not bringing up here at this magic moment here?
Yep.
You had a guest who gave me the answer. I'm the oldest one in the room here. I'm in my 60s here. So you're all of different generations here, from
this
millennials
is Mark's
to
answer, by the way.
Yeah, from millennials to Gen Xers to old baby boomers like me. And I'm always asking people, when do you know you got enough? Not a goal, but you say, okay, I'm set. Well, how much is enough? And you had a guest in here that gave me an answer to that. And they said,
If I
remember this correctly, he said you take your house, assuming that you have your house paid off, which is everybody's goal.
Yeah.
You take your house, the value of your house, and it's three times that, and that gives you the amount of money. So if you have a $250,000 house, you need $1 million. If you got $1 million house, you need $3 million. So a house plus three times the house paid off and three times the value of the house, he said, would give you enough to ride out whatever comes. You agree with that?
You know what? I think, like what we've talked about so far, I think it's a great rule of thumb. But I'm going to fall back to it's going to a case by case. And I think going through a financial plan will help to solidify. But I think it's a very good rule of thumb.
Yeah, no, and I would agree with Mark. Absolutely. But what Bart is actually saying is, okay, if you're going to drill in, because we go in depth with financial planning and understanding their budgets and expenses, this is what we have seen on a more in-depth scenario versus very big picture rule of thumb.
But that was the first time I've ever heard anybody give me a number.
Yep.
When my father was younger, was an executive in the 60s and 70s, first of all, he didn't expect to live past his 60s or 70s, so it was easier to calculate a number. You didn't expect things to change that much. Once you retired, you had maybe another 3 to 5 years, and that was it.
Right.
Now we're looking at 30 years
exactly,
or more.
Minimum, yeah.
And who knows what's going to happen in that 30-year period? What's the cost of goods? Is inflation going to come back?
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. So what's healthcare going to be? That's the one that scares the hell out of me. And so that's the first time I heard anybody say, I'll give you a formula. Everybody else says, I don't know.
And I think he's pulling, that's from like the Robert Kiyosaki, like the use asset, work assets. It's like the 3 to 1. I think that's where that formula comes from.
Okay. Well, first time I ever heard a formula, so hallelujah. You woke me up on that one.
I love it. And I'm so glad that you remembered and you paid attention from many of our podcasts ago.
Number three, I think.
Yeah.
That was a ways back.
Really
it just really struck me because nobody else would. In fact, there used to be a billboard on the freeway, and it was for one of the, I don't know, Schwab or something. Like, it wasn't Schwab, but one of those companies like that.
Could be Schwab.
And do you have enough money saved? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it was that kind of scary thought.
Yeah. And I guess also it goes back to where are you in your life? And I think that's what you kind of started with. What number do you project out? And maybe if you were kind of flip the numbers in a totally different direction and say, okay, I just need at least a starting point of saying, what does that look like now? How much of my income now do I want to save? I know we disagree or agree, kind of. Yeah. I say minimum, you want to save 10%. Mm-hmm. And if you can go up to 20, great. There's nothing wrong with that. And if you're feeling super daring, you know, sometimes I challenge people that maybe one spouse does all the income, the other one doesn't. Maybe they can do like all of their, one of the spouse's incomes or 50%. I mean, I've seen a lot of different variations.
Yeah. Well, and
I was just going to say, what do you say to so many of us that lost it all? We were trying to be good people. First of all, we're baby boomers. We didn't save much to begin with. Okay. Mm-hmm. We're living for today, not tomorrow.
Yeah.
All of a sudden we woke up and said, we ain't got enough. I think the average baby boomer has $50,000 or $60,000 or $70,000 saved. That's scary.
Yeah.
And on top of that, whatever we had was in things like these famous 401ks that dropped 50%. And how much do you have to go up to earn back a 50% loss? I forgot the formula, but it's a lot more than 50%.
It's 100%.
It's 100%. Okay, you got to go up 100%.
Because you got to recover your loss and then go back.
Yeah. If you have $100,
right,
and you lose 50%, it's 50.
Right.
And then what percentage of 50 does it take to get to 100?
There you go.
100%.
There you go. So now it's even worse. I didn't have enough to begin with, and what I had got wiped out in the Great Recession, and I ain't got enough years left to make that back.
And can I just – I just want to clarify something so it's not just semantics. You said my 401k lost money in your example.
Right.
So it wasn't your 401k that lost money. It was the investments that you chose in your 401k.
Yes.
So 401k is just like an IRA doesn't lose money, just like a trust account doesn't lose money. It's the investments that you choose. So that's really important distinction.
But the way they're set up, like my wife works for a bank, there aren't a lot of choices in the 401k. I mean, there's a limited number of options. I don't think you – maybe I'm wrong. Can she go and just – invest in anything with that, or isn't she obligated to pick a hand from a handful of menu selections that they've predetermined?
There's a menu. There's a finite number of options, but by law, there has to be options that are. I'll use the word generic term safe. So it could be a money market, could be something that's a fixed guarantee that works kind of like a CD.
Right.
And then of course a range of stock type funds and sometimes specialty funds like maybe real estate or commodities, but. Point is, you have the option, although it's not infinite like you might at a brokerage account, it does have a variance of risks.
Any ideas? Anybody ever tried to quantify how much money was lost in those 401ks for baby boomers like me? Because a lot, I'm not alone, and my friends all seem to have suffered a loss, and I don't think any of us have recovered that loss in the last, I don't know, whatever it is, 7 years or some 5, 6, 7 years. We've made up, maybe, but I don't think we've gotten back to zero.
You should probably be our clients.
No, I agree.
All of our clients are back. Yeah.
Are they good?
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
So there you go.
So I'm going to kind of counterpoint your...
I'm writing you a check right now.
Yeah. No, and I actually just want to say one thing that what you mentioned, and this is kind of a side topic, but we definitely talk about this all the time with our clients, is sometimes... The loss, like what you're referencing right now, is a lot, it hurts a lot more than the gain. And so that is absolutely part of what we do and how we manage money and the strategies is we're able to, you know, Bart's going to say, and I know this is off topic, but we manage downside risk. And so we actually try to navigate through that so we don't go down when the market goes down. Because then that way, at the end of the day, we don't have clients like you that is in pain for years because of what happened.
And I, since I'm the poster boy for bad behavior here today, I'll admit that it turned me off of any kind of investing.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, which is unfortunate.
I mean, it really, I know that's a stupid, ridiculous, dumb thing. So I missed all these last couple of years when it zoomed up because I just thought, I ain't doing this anymore. I'll buy something really super low and super safe. I'm just turned off of the whole thing.
Yeah, so that we are kind of going off topic about it, but now I think it needs to be addressed. So at the end of the day, well, a couple of things. One, in this is my 26th year, and what I've learned over the time is, to Letitia's point, and it's been scientifically proven, psychologically proven, that the amount of pain that a downside will cause for someone is exponentially greater than, hey, you know, I got a 10% return. Hey, that's great. I lost 10%. You know, people are going to lose their mind.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, we keep that very close to the top of our mind when we're managing our money and our recommendations. And secondly, part of our financial planning process helps to create what we call a family index, which is, hey, what is it that this client, particular client, needs to earn in order to, now we're getting back on topic, to have a successful retirement? Let's just say, so we've had some clients who had a great liquidity event and have had enough money to last a lifetime. So with that said, do they need to get 15, 20% per year in order to survive? No. Their family index is 4%. All they need is 4%, and they're buying houses, going on trips, doing everything they need to do. So why would they ever, and they don't, why would they want to take the risk of trying to get a higher return knowing that they could significantly lose money? So that, in working with an advisor, I think is one of the most important processes to go through. It doesn't matter what the different markets are earning. It matters what you need to earn.
Right.
And there is going to be the flip side. We are going to meet people who are, regardless of how much money they make, maybe they didn't keep enough money. Maybe they didn't get started till later in life. Maybe their peak earning years, it's 50, and now they're making lots of money and they haven't done anything before.
Yeah.
Guess what? We're going to have to take on more risk. Your family index is 10% or 12%. That's what we're going to need to try to earn in order to have a successful phase two.
Yeah.
And do the old formulas apply? Because the other thing I hear all the time is the rules have changed. The rules have changed with the stock market. The rules have changed with, I don't know, technology companies. And I don't hear the same. All the other investment shows we've run this station all talk about what happened in the past, and from that you are predicting the future. And there are formulas and theories and whatnot based on 50 years of performance. And then there are those that come in here and say, throw all those out. The world,
past doesn't predict future gains. Actually, I would say the other way around.
Yeah, right.
So
we had,
you know, it's interesting about that. We had an investment committee meeting, Letitia and I, with our partners a couple of hours ago, and part of the conversation was, as we were dealing with one of our providers, was, hey, we've got a service that helps project forward. Now, there's no guarantees. I mean, we all know the disclaimers, but it helps to project what kind of risk and stuff going forward. And there was those of us in the investment committee, actually Letitia and I were on the same side of this one, was, hey, we think history is very important as well. Now, to that, things have changed. The makeup of the S&P 500, the stocks are different. And
the climate's different.
And you used the word the rules have changed. I wouldn't probably say the rules have changed. I would say it's a new world. It doesn't mean the rules have changed. It's still diversification is important, you know, being diversified and so forth, but the circumstances have changed. And well, when I got in the business in the 90s, if you didn't get 20% per year as an advisor, you got fired.
Yeah,
And then
I remember those.
And
days.
Then the year 2000 hit, and think kind of shook up the whole world, the industry. And then we're like, okay, pick ourselves up, wipe the dust off, we're back, and we're earning, you know, probably not 20%, we're earning 10% per year, and everything that we projected was 10%. And then we hit, so that was the 2000, and then we hit the second recession. So the kind of the new world is projections in retirement planning is 6%. It's no longer 10, it's no longer 15.
Wow.
Now, will we get greater in years? Oh, of course. But there's a good chance that the long-term returns are going to be closer to 6.
Wow.
So I want to make sure we don't run out of time here, because we actually specifically came on our goals today was to actually share a couple strategies. Yep. And so depending on where you are in your life cycle, or if you're a business owner, or if you're an employee or executive, you have different investment plan options. And we wanted just to kind of talk about, you know, yes, we want you to save as much as you possibly can. And to answer your question is, we want to make sure that you're diversifying your portfolio. The ideal situation is being able to be in contact with someone that has a understanding of what's going on in the actual market, that necessarily isn't, it's not your friend, it's not your neighbor, it's not, you know, someone through the register line at the grocery store. It's someone that doesn't have an emotional connection with the market. It's looking at the numbers, it's the facts, it's the trends, and does this all the time. So that is a little bit different of a take versus where's the median, what are they talking about right now, because there's always media, media sells. So just wanted to be able to make sure that we address that and start, depending on when you start, just start, right? You don't have to say, okay, I have to have this formal plan done before I can start. Just start somewhere and go from there. So if you were, let's pretend if you were like a employee, mm-hmm. we can talk about that. Maybe some of your different options could be like a 401k.
Sure. So yeah. Okay. As an employee, first of all, there's a line drawn by the IRS at somewhere between $100,000 and $120,000. They use a very technical term, highly compensated employee versus non-highly compensated.
Right.
So there are, and the reason that that's important because there are some limitations. 401ks can be very complicated to administer and run. Mm-hmm. But as an employee, the maximum is no longer percentage of income. It's 100% of income up to. Mm-hmm. And if you're under 50 years old, it's $18,500.
Yep.
And if you're over 50 years old, it's $24,500.
Great.
So you work for a company and you earn $25,000, you could put, and you're over 50, you could put $24,500.
And that's the same as a 403B or 457.
Yeah. So for those not in the know, a 403B is like a 401k, but offered at a nonprofit organization. Could mm-hmm. be like a church, could be a nonprofit hospital. And then a 457 is similar characteristics to a 401k, but for a government.
So they all have the same different tax codes. But it basically, it gives you similar provisions and
exactly.
you can save money for
exactly.
your retirement.
Exactly.
So, Bart, I have a question. Mm-hmm. If my company isn't matching, mm-hmm. do I still want to contribute? Because I feel like I hear that sometimes, from the millennials. Like, my company isn't matching, I'm not doing anything.
Yeah, and it makes no sense to me. I take that back. I can see what might inspire someone to say that.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, let's think about it for a second. You're putting money in. And let's say it's $100, mm-hmm. right? You're not being taxed on $100, right? So you've just saved $35 to $40, and yet you've got $100 working for you. Mm-hmm. Every year, let's say you're doing $100 a month. Every month, another $100, another $100, another $100. So you are actually borrowing from the government the money that you would pay in taxes. You're uh-huh. earning growth on it.
Yeah.
And then at the end, yes, when you take money out, you pay the taxes. So whether or not you get any match, it's still very effective. And I used to say when I was doing more with 401ks, it's kind of, you're not going to remember this. Remember Popeye?
Popeye.
The cartoon?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
If she said no, she'd have to leave.
Yeah, I know.
I know Popeye.
Okay, do you remember Wimpy?
Uh-huh.
You don't. So Wimpy would come up to Popeye or to Olive Oil. That sounds really funny to say those. And he goes, I will gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today.
Aww.
So that's what a 401k is. As an employee, you're saying to the government, I'll gladly pay you when I retire
yeah.
to enjoy the growth today.
And what's the overall reason why they would do that? What's the idea behind that?
So it's tax-deferred savings uh-huh. and tax-deductible savings. So they're reducing their overall taxes,
uh-huh.
and they're saving on a tax-favored, tax-deductible basis.
So today I might make more money in my pocket just because I'm not paying as much money in taxes, and then maybe when I retire, I'm not paying as much money in my taxes because I'm not getting all the income.
That's theoretical, too, but let's just say the tax is the match. You're still way ahead because you've deferred and you've gained on the deferral. But that theoretically could happen. You're in a lower tax bracket.
Okay.
I know we're running really short on time, and I want to make sure we cover, I think a lot of our clients are self-employed,
okay.
either professionals, attorneys, consultants, or something like that. You know, in this case, I'll just use myself as an example because in our world, when you're an advisor, you're an independent consultant for your firm. So I have set up, it's called a solo 401k.
Okay.
So I mentioned earlier, 401ks can be costly, expensive, complicated. A solo 401k, there's nothing. You just get a plan document. It costs a couple $100 and you're done.
I like that.
Yeah. And since I'm not as old as Paul, but I'm older than you and I'm over 50, I can do $24,500 per year.
Yeah.
Now, on top of that, I can do a profit sharing plan. It's part of the same plan.
Okay.
That means 25% of my adjusted gross
uh-huh.
I can put on top of that.
I like that.
And then kind of old school, they're called defined benefit or pension plans that the big companies used to provide, or some of them still do, some of the aerospace uh-huh. and big companies.
Pension plan. People
pension
know what pension
plan.
Plans are.
So
yeah.
when you retire, you have X amount of money coming to you.
Uh-huh.
Well, the formula is pretty complicated. We don't have the time to discuss it, but it allows someone to put a lot more money in that plan.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that allows me to put up to another $150,000.
Mm.
So at the end of the day, I can put up about $250,000 per year into a plan. If I stack all those three plans,
nice.
That's some pretty good tax planning.
Nice.
And that's great retirement savings.
So if you were going to be managing that, just what Paul was saying earlier, and you have limited options, and if you're managing it, don't you have more selection?
I have unlimited options because we're using just brokerage accounts. So for all three, I can do anything. Like, I can't use physical gold. I mean, there's some things that are
But did you hear that, Paul? You have a lot of fun selection.
See, I like that. See? I like choice.
I like choice, too.
And then the last one, since we've got only about 2 minutes left, let's say you're a small business, maybe a small business owner, which are a lot of our clients have had a small business, and then they liquidate it, and then they have lots of money at the end.
Yeah. What's their solution?
So you can either do a full 401k, pay the cost, and go through all that administration.
Yeah.
That might be the better choice. There's something called a simple IRA and or simple 401k.
Okay.
Takes away almost all of the administration costs, maybe $50 per year per participant, as opposed to hundreds, maybe thousands of dollars total.
Yeah.
The limits are a little bit less. It's instead of the $18,500, it's $12,500 if you're under 50, $15,500 if you're over 50.
Yeah.
And then you have some. You can do a match on top of it, up to. Do you remember the limit? Another like $5,000 or $6,000 on top of that.
Uh-huh.
So, as a small business owner, that's something to take a look at for ease and still be able to provide, a good employee benefit.
Well, I definitely think that we have a lot of options, and so if people have questions, they definitely can reach out to us. How do they find you?
So we can find us at zanbergenreport.com. They can reach either of us at OptiVest Wealth Management.com. And our emails are Letitia@OptiVestInc.com. I'm Bart@OptiVestInc.com. Anything else, Paul?
Lots of choices, but really only one answer. Call you guys.
I love it.
Yeah. And that's 949-363-8686. 949-363-8686. Thanks for joining us, everyone, today. We look forward to being in the studio next week. Have a great week. Cheers.
Thank you.
Tune in next week for the latest edition of the Zandbergen Report, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Catch up on our recent shows by visiting www.bartzandbergen.com. Interested in being a featured guest on our show or have a question you'd like to hear us answer on the Zandbergen Report? Email podcast@bartzandbergen.com.
Zanbergen Report is a production of OC Talk Radio and is provided for educational purposes only. The content of this program and the views of the guests should not be considered as recommendations by OC Talk Radio or investment advice from the host, Bart Zanbergen, or any other entity attached to this production. Investors should always consult qualified financial, investment, tax, or legal professionals prior to investing.